BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Oh, the wheels of expansion are turning today as the PAC-12 Conference is working down its wish list, starting with Memphis and Tulane and South Florida this morning. I was told early this morning that it would be a cascade of offers, meaning they had planned contingency upon contingency. Will we get breaking news on today's show? I think there's a fair chance that the PAC-12 Conference adds a school during this radio show. We'll see if they get it done. They did not get it done with the American Athletic Conference members that they were in pursuit of this morning. People in Memphis, fans in Memphis, left feeling a little flat when Memphis and Tulane and South Florida announced that they were staying in the American Athletic Conference. Now, I got a few thoughts on this. One, it looks like a swing and a miss for the Pac-12. It doesn't look good. And I'm left kind of puzzled at how a conference that was so stealth-like with the additions of San Diego State and Boise State and Fresno State and Colorado State looks like they made a rookie mistake with this attempted coup on the American. You know, how are you so secretive in one hand and then not so much in the other? Maybe some of it is now you have six schools in the room trying to keep a secret before you only had two. And Washington State and Oregon State knew they could trust each other because they had been equally victimized and yet left behind by the rest of the Pac-12 conference. They were in the same soup, so to speak. I am looking at the geography of South Florida, Tulane, Memphis, and I am left kind of looking at it and going, I understand why the Pac-12 conference was saying to those schools, look, we can help you, but we have to leave some money in the pot to cover our travel expenses. I think they were being reasonable and rational. I also think they will now pivot very quickly, if they haven't already, to UNLV. I think UNLV and Utah State move to the top of the list for the Pac-12 conference as they attempt this rebuild. Remember, they've got to get to eight members. We'll get to Gonzaga in a second and the curious case of Brett McMurphy, who tweeted out earlier today that it was a done deal and that Gonzaga was joining. And then within seconds, it was refuted as I got on the phone with representatives at Gonzaga who said no deal. I also talked to the WCC conference who said, first we heard of that. And then I also fact checked it with the Pac-12 who said no, but did confirm to me that there have been discussions between Gonzaga and the Pac-12. Maybe it was just a case of jumping the gun. Maybe it was just an honest mistake. Maybe it's wishful thinking. Maybe Brett McMurphy or a source of Brett McMurphy is thinking a lot like the rest of us that, you know, Gonzaga does make sense for the Pac-12. And at some point, I would not be surprised to see Gonzaga come into the fold. It just makes sense. But, you know, conspiracy theorists out there wondering if this is, again, a competing entity that has a consulting firm that, you know, is not acting in the best interest of the Pac-12, that is planting misinformation out there. It happens in politics. It happens in business. It's certainly going to happen in the Pac-12 conference. We've got a great show for you today. It is a shortened show, but I want your thoughts on what the Pac-12 is trying to do. I especially want to hear from you if you're a Washington State fan, Oregon State fan, or somebody, a former Pac-12 fan who's looking at, as this entity tries to reconstruct itself, you're looking at the logic kind of play itself out. They first said, all right, let's get the best group of five schools. Let's put them all together. Let's get access to the playoff. And that worked in the sense that you got four Mountain West Conference schools, the top four schools that bring the most value, who have joined Washington State and Oregon State. They don't want to share with those other schools. It now looks like, you know, your attempt to get Memphis and Tulane and South Florida didn't work out. They are going to stay in the American. They think they have as good a shot there. Maybe they're risk adverse. I don't know. University presidents try to figure them out. They're not bungee cord jumpers, right? They're not jumping off bridges. They're not parachuters. They are risk averse. They're collegial. They sort of rule by consensus. They make decisions that are bulletproof. They don't crawl out on a limb. They don't leave a newspaper and go launch their own independent endeavor. No. They don't have that entrepreneurial spirit. So I kind of understand what the presidents at those schools are doing, just going, hey, man, this is not a complete no-brainer. We're going to stand pat for now. And I'm left looking at the Pac-12 going, what is your move now? Because the Pac-12 has to fill two spots between now and next June, and I'm told they will not wait. Like, they pivoted this morning. They gave a noon deadline to those schools. Those schools got back to them and said, we're staying. We're not going to take your offer. Feels to me like the Pac-12 looked at Memphis, looked at Tulane, looked at South Florida, and said, we like you. You fit our mission, but we don't love you to the point where we're going to overpay for you and go all out trying to get you. We're okay competing against you if you say you're not in. And they have said that, and now it becomes a little defensive maneuver, the Mountain West trying to hold on to their schools, and the Pac-12 going, we'd like UNLV, we might like Utah State, and I want to know what you think of that strategy. 503-417-7575. Gonzaga still out there as well. I do think the Pac-12 is interested in Gonzaga. I do think that the Pac-12 has had discussions, including today with Gonzaga. I do not think they're anywhere near announcing Gonzaga to the Pac-12 is a done deal. The reaction, as I called on that front, was utter revolt. Like, no, and that doesn't help our negotiation, and no, that doesn't help us with the Mount, you know, with the WCC. That Gonzaga's got to try to live in the WCC. It wouldn't want that out there, even if it was close to making a deal. I'll take your reaction to it all. I've written about it twice now at johnconzano.com today. There's so much to dissect. Steven, it's one of those days. It's one of those days where the news is just breaking and coming, and you don't know what's going to happen next. And I do think that the decision UNLV and the Pac-12 could be coming down the pipeline anytime now.
It's also one of those days, though, John, that what do we believe? Like, there's reports coming out that it's happening, that all this stuff is happening for sure, and we just don't know exactly what's happening and what exactly it actually is. Now, the American did put out their statement saying that all these teams are staying, Tulane, Memphis, and UTSA, they're staying in the American Conference, so that seems pretty official at that point. But, you got Brandon Murphy saying Gonzaga is joining for a full revenue share. Like, I mean, this isn't just stuff that you throw out there. Like, this is big-time news, and I think it affects the whole conference. So when I heard the news of Gonzaga going to the Pac-12, first I was shocked because, I would have thought it came from you. So I hesitantly believed it, but then I thought, man, that's a good move by the Pac-12. Like, I'd love it for as a fan. But then I go back and I look at your Twitter, you're like, yeah, nothing's happened yet. And I see all these other refutes, and the Gonzaga AD had made a statement to some reporters. So, oh man, it is just one of those days. It's one of those days where it's just hard to believe anything you hear. But, we got to just hopefully trust the guys that we can trust.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think Gonzaga to the Pac-12 makes sense too. But I just kind of wondered, is the Big 12 conference or somebody else out there trying to run a little interference, trying to muddy the waters up a little bit because, it ultimately would love to have Gonzaga in its fold.
Do you think it could have been the Big 12 that reported this to try to hurt their position of bargaining?
I don't know, but it's such a weird thing to report with such certainty that Gonzaga is a done deal and it's a full share. I mean, that detail of a full share, give me a break. Like, who is that meant to serve? And so I immediately saw it and was very easily able to fact check it. But here's what's going on. You got the group of four, right? You got the Power Four that know in most years that their conference champion is going to get an automatic berth to the playoff. The fifth conference will also get an automatic berth to the playoff. And so it matters who the fifth best conference is in college football. That matters greatly because that conference, if it can get the fifth bid in most years, can then go to the negotiating table, not just with TV partners, but with the CFP itself. And it can say, hey, we're getting into the playoff more often than anybody else. We are the fifth conference. Yeah, we know there's no such thing as a Power Five, but we're getting that fifth berth. We're entitled to more than $3.6 million in distributions. Look at the Big 12. It's getting $13 million, and their conference champion gets there as often as our conference champion. Hey, what gives? We should be in line with that. And so I think some of that is going on with these conferences. And if I'm the Power Four, and in particular, if I'm the SEC and the Big Ten, like, they're probably not even worried about what is happening with, you know, the American and the Pac-12 Lite or whatever it is. They're not worried about that. But, you know, if I'm the SEC and the Big Ten, I'd rather have everybody else fighting over that fifth spot than have it be determined and know that there are five players sitting at the table, right? You know, it's like we're playing poker and we have four regulars, and then we just say whoever wins the small table tournament can come here and sit at the big table. And that's what's going on right now with the Pac-12 and others. And I am left thinking about this too, Stephen. Like, you tell me what you think. Boise State, San Diego State, Fresno State, Washington State, Oregon State, Colorado State, UNLV, and whoever else they add, is that a better conference than the American, which has University of Texas, San Antonio, Memphis, Tulsa, Tulane? Is it a better conference, or is it kind of a, we'll see every year?
I think it's we wait and see every year. I truly do. I think Boise State is probably the best of everybody. Like, if you're going to rank teams just by, you know, prestigiousness on the football field, it has probably Boise State's number one out of everybody, like even over Oregon State, yeah, Washington State. But I do think that not getting Memphis, not getting Tulane, not getting, you know, all these other schools,
South Florida
from the American, and even if you're going to go for like a UTSA or something like that, like, I think that's a big loss for the Pac-12. I really do. And I think right now you're looking at the Pac-12 and they're on the same level as the American. And I think if you are a team like Memphis or Tulane, you looked at it and you said, look, if we stay in the American, we're going to be the top teams in this conference every single season. And we can get a chance to the College Football Playoff, but we have to compete with the Pac-12, where if you went to the Pac-12, it's going to be a real dogfight every year, whoever wins that conference. So it may be for them, they look at it and say, this is a better chance for us to get to the playoff rather than move conferences to make one, you know, make the best everybody else conference. I think it's a big loss for the Pac-12, because right now you can argue, and I think it could be year in, year out basis of who's better between them and the American as the, you know, the number one group of five conference.
The only caveat to that for me is when I look at Tulane's success, I see their coach leaving for Houston, and I'm going, what are they going to be? Memphis, to me, was the crown jewel. Memphis was the school that you wanted. The others were along for the ride. Now, I know it's being reported that there were four. I am told that the Pac-12 only offered terms to three members, so they did not offer UTSA. So I'm very interested why that happened and why they only wanted Tulane, South Florida, and Memphis. It looked like that maybe UNLV was already in the room and in the fold. I am told that the Pac-12 is talking to UNLV today, and so I am curious to see if that could happen rapidly, and if UNLV comes into the fold, then who is school number eight? But I don't like that they didn't keep it a secret. Like, you know, they kept the four Mountain West schools a real secret. It was a surprise when they got added under the cover of night that Wednesday night, and, you know, everybody was like, oh, gosh, it's happening. And with this one, we all saw it coming. And I think Tim Pernetti, the commissioner of the American, had time to kind of go and say, hey, let me get to Memphis. Let me get on campus. Let me talk to the president. Let me keep everybody engaged. I think it did not unfold in a way that was favorable for the Pac-12 either. Let's go to Roy in Portland. We got lines open, 417-7575 in the 503 area code. Roy, go ahead.
Hey, John. Man. I'm sorry, man, but I've been thinking about this, you know, for the last couple of weeks, and it's just my opinion. This makes absolutely no sense. You could have just stayed in the Mountain West, been one of the best, if you Oregon State or Washington State, been one of the best teams in the Mountain West and hope that a Big 12 or somebody else come get you.
Yeah, but you got to share, but then you're sharing with New Mexico and San Jose State, and you're getting a media distribution of only about, you know, $4.5 million. Roy, they can negotiate more where they are if they just take the best Mountain West schools, and they get to keep the $255 million that they won in court. If they go to the Mountain West, Roy, they have to give that money back to the schools that departed.
So this is all about that $255 million there. This is only to because
no,
right now,
no, no. Listen to me. Listen to me. I love you, Roy, but listen. If you are sharing with all the schools in the Mountain West, why do you think the four schools left the Mountain West? They didn't want to share with everybody else in the Mountain West. They said there's too many mouths to feed. We can get a better deal together. We'll go with Oregon State and Washington State. There's a little more money there and more stability there.
Okay, so what if the Big 12 comes to, say, Oregon State and say, in like next year, and say, we want you to join the
They're
Big
gone
12.
Tomorrow. So, they're gone tomorrow, right? You know they'd go tomorrow.
This doesn't make sense then. I mean, why? Because the Big 12 at any time can come and get Washington State and Oregon State. Then what's going to happen to the schools that leave? Now they're going to be stuck. And then that conference is going to dissolve. So doesn't make sense.
They're all going to dissolve, though, aren't they? In 5 years, how many conferences do you think we will have in major college football in 5-6 years?
I don't know, but it's just with this. This is why I wanted an 18 playoff for stuff like this, because once you get past 8 teams anyway, I'm not interested in seeing San Diego State go up against Texas. Don't waste my time. I don't want to see Georgia against Oregon State, because it's a waste. You're not going to win, okay? And it's just a waste. It needed to be 8 teams, and that's it. And this whole 12-team thing leads to stuff like this, in my opinion. I just don't understand it. If the Big 12 comes for Oregon State and Washington State, and right. the rest of these teams leave the Mountain West to go to this conference, they're gonna feel bad.
Yeah.
Because
one
that
of the
could
things,
very well happen.
One of the things too that you know I was told by Memphis and Tulane and South Florida is they were only being asked to sign a grant of rights that was 5 years old. They said they appreciated that part of it because it was honest. It basically was a. We're just here until these other media deals come up and these other conferences, all these schools could scatter again, or the best two or three schools in the conference could scatter, as you're pointing out. But there is a downside to just saying, hey, we give up, wave the white flag, go join the Mountain West. A, you're sharing with more mouths to feed. B, the settlement you just won in court that you fought so hard for, that $255 million, that you can live off of for a few years, you have to give it back to the schools. Like, you know, if the Pac-12 dissolved, you'd have to give it back. So you're not going to dissolve. You have to remain. And Boise State, San Diego State, Fresno State, and Colorado State said, hey, we're tired of being lumped together with Wyoming and New Mexico, San Jose State. We need to stop subsidizing Hawaii. We need to get into a better conference. And so now you got 6 teams. Now, it may turn out that it's a blessing. You may look back 3 or 4 years from now and you may go, it's a real blessing they didn't get Tulane. Look, they really fell off. South Florida, the travel would have been brutal. I think it's kind of why the Pac-12's offer to those schools was not like a no-brainer, you have to accept it offer. I think that the Pac-12's, you know, said, hey, look, we're going to have significant travel. We'll give you $2.5 million in travel subsidy. And, you know, your media money will be $12 to $15 million a year in a distribution. And you're going to get access to the playoff. It's not a no-brainer offer. So I don't blame Memphis and Tulane and, you know, South Florida for going, ugh. Like, if this were significantly better, you jump all over it. But I am left going, like, what happens next? And I am fascinated by this stuff. What is it going to mean? Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, John. This is Matt. How you doing?
Matt. Sorry. I thought it was Mark. Go ahead,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. Mark, Matt. It's all in the Bible.
Oh, good.
You know.
My bad.
So, yeah, first off, I think if you look at the group of five conferences, even with just the four that the PAC has added, they're already stronger than the Sun Belt or Conference USA or Mountain West or AAC simply because they don't have the bottom end. And you've mentioned that. I think the second thing is I don't think Washington State and Oregon State would leave for the Big 12 automatically because they've signed a 5-year grant of rights with the other
True.
Schools, right? And
True.
I think they're
yeah.
angling for 2030. I think the next thing, I'm disappointed Memphis Tulane wouldn't come. I thought USF was a little bit of a bridge too far geographically. It's unfortunate those schools are tied. UTSA remains to be seen. UNLV is a no-brainer. And Gonzaga, John, come on. Gonzaga is a no-brainer. You got to get them. National brand. Elevates the conference, and my sleeper pick would be New Mexico. I know their football program's in the dumps, but it's a huge media market. It's right next to Texas. It's a great basketball school. They have a good head coach. I really think it's a better mark than Utah State, which has the lowest NIL dollars in the Mountain West.
This just in, Matt, Pete Thamel reporting that UNLV has agreed to commit to the Mountain West for future membership. If that proves to be true, that leaves UNLV and Air Force as flagship schools in the Mountain West, and it leaves the Pac-12 now pivoting even further. Is it a Utah State or bust, or is there some move for the Pac-12 here? Fascinating stuff. I want more of your feedback at 503-417-7575. I'll get to the bottom of UNLV. Are they in? Out? We'll find out. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Thamel reporting that UNLV is ready to commit to the Mountain West Conference. Does that take the Rebels off the table for the Pac-12? We shall find out what the Pac-12's next move will be. Remember, I was told it was a cascading order of offers, starting with Memphis, Tulane, South Florida, then UNLV, then Utah State. So I expect Utah State would be the next target of the Pac-12. What is UNLV thinking? What are they seeing? Is it possible that Gloria Navarez, the Mountain West Conference Commissioner, is promising Air Force and UNLV some of those exit fees and penalties that the Pac-12 is going to receive? We shall see as this unfolds and develops. Stephen, what was your reaction as you saw UNLV?
It was that exact same thing as what does the Mountain West have to offer UNLV that makes them want to stay? Because in my opinion, if UNLV were to jump to the Pac-12, like we've talked about this, you know, the Pac-12's option was trying to be that best conference of, you know, the group of five or, you know, the other four conferences. And so that way, if you win the Pac-12, you probably are getting into the college football playoff. Like that's kind of how it would work. Now the American, you know, maybe the move that Memphis and Tulane, the American schools, decided not to go to the Pac-12, maybe that affects UNLV's thought process and says, look, like maybe the American is going to try to compete with the Pac-12. Now maybe UNLV is thinking, I don't know, maybe like is UNLV being the top team in the Mountain West and having a chance to be the highest ranked other conference? Does that affect them? Like, is that
it's so diluted, though? Don't you think the G5 conferences and the Pac-12 light, let's call it that, don't you think they should have banded together?
I think so. I think they should have. And it seemed like they're all competing against each other to be that number one spot, when if they worked together, I feel like it would be the best of the rest, right? Like now we're going to have to decide who is the best. It doesn't make any sense to me why UNLV is going to do that, unless, like you said, maybe it is they just get, you know, a wad of cash from Gloria Navarez and says, here, you know, to help your programs out. Maybe UNLV just wants to be the best of the Mountain West and be at the top of the conference in basketball and in football. Maybe that is just so appealing to them because it doesn't make sense of, you know, any other reason, because they are a good program.
But think about the $111 million that the Pac-12 and the four departing members are going to pay to the Mountain West. It may just be possible that UNLV went, yes, we want to go to the Pac-12. We're 100% interested in joining the Pac-12. But Gloria's offering a $20 million bonus to stay, which she could do. Because if she loses UNLV and Air Force, the Mountain West is done.
And Pete Thamel's also tweeted out that San Jose State also plans to commit to the Mountain West, per a source for him as well.
I don't think the Pac-12 wanted San Jose either.
But if they can't get UNLV or Air, like who can they get? I mean,
Utah State's the next target on the list as I see that cascading list of options. So Utah State, which has, you know, three 10-win seasons in the last 12 years, and by the way, had the fifth best viewership in the Mountain West. The other four are already in the Pac-12. So Utah State would have been number five when it came to TV viewership. UNLV was down the list because Vegas is just not engaged and interested for some ridiculous reason, and the successful football team that is being fielded at UNLV. It puts the Pac-12 in a swing and miss situation. Like, this isn't great for the Pac-12. And I'm left thinking about the strategy of the Pac-12 as you know, now begin to see, hey, their potential media rights contract starts to shrink and shrink and shrink when they don't get markets. But I have to think Utah State is the next school. Where is Utah State's declaration that they're returning to the Mountain West? I am very interested in that one. And by the way, if you're a UNLV, maybe, you know, Stephen, let me put you in their shoes. Here, look, this is a five-year deal. 5 years, and the landscape of college athletics is going to draw a line in the sand and go, hey, top 50 teams are going on this side of it, and the rest are going on the other side of it. There's no ability for you to do much about your media market, but you can definitely affect which side of the line you're on by winning football games. Can UNLV, with a straight face, say, hey, we're going to beat the pants off of San Jose State and Wyoming and New Mexico and Air Force, and we're going to present ourselves as that number five team in America? Your non-conference scheduling becomes awfully important when you start to play that game, because, you know, I do think the Pac-12 has got a better core group of six, more competitive programs with Boise State and Fresno State and Colorado State and San Diego State.
Is that viewed across the nation? Is that how the Pac-12 is going to be viewed across the nation with those six teams?
Yeah, I think that is a better conference, but I don't think it's enough for Roy is a great example of kind of the thinking of the SEC fan or the Big Ten fan. He's going, these schools don't even matter. Like, these schools are not in the conversation. He's not alone in saying it, and that's why I love that he calls in. Because he's saying, you know, hey, look, this is a non-factor. These schools should just go away. Now, that's not how he would be thinking if he were a fan of one of those schools that was in the Pac-12 light or whatever it's going to be called. But in the end, I'm left going, we're watching a little bit of Game of Thrones play out. And people are, you know, obviously some Pac-12 fans had their hopes set on getting UNLV or getting, you know, getting a Memphis in the fold. It now looks like, you know, the 7 and 8 schools could be more along the lines of a Utah State and who knows for the eighth school.
Do you think now the report of Pete Thamel saying UNLV is staying in the Mountain West, did that have any effect of what happened earlier with the report of Brett McMurphy saying Gonzaga was heading to the Pac-12?
No, but I now am wondering why the Pac-12 didn't have the foresight to take UNLV when it took the other four schools. You know, there was this thought that the Pac-12 could circle back. Yeah, they could circle back and get them, that they were going to have the ability to go back and get them. They didn't want to alert Nevada because, you know, UNLV would have to have a conversation with Nevada. You know, I don't think they're married together, but they're board, you know, it would have been a board meeting involved. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's start with Portland. Mark in Portland, you're up.
Hey, how's it going? I have a little bit of a difference of opinion than the SEC Roy guy. I think we should be pushing for 16 teams. That way, this won't be an issue. The Pac-12's champion, the whatever other conference you were talking about, they're champion. And, you know, I know that the NIL has affected college football and the rich have gotten richer. But I remember a time, John, I know I bring this up a lot, but Boise State was a team that could have beat anybody in a playoff-type atmosphere in 2009, 2010. TCU beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl as a member of the Mountain West Conference. Utah destroyed, knocked out Alabama in the first quarter in the Sugar Bowl in 2009. So we, as fans, we love to see that. Let's put them on the field. Let these other conferences have their champion, control their own destiny. That's the way it is in every other sport, and that's the way it should be in college football.
I like the idea. I like the ability for people to control their destiny. I just tweeted that the Pac-12 has offered membership to Utah State. I can confirm that. Source telling me that the Pac-12 offered UNLV as well. And so UNLV, maybe, Stephen, played the Pac-12 against the Mountain West in their negotiations. So keep an eye on that.
To Mark's point, to prove it on the field, and to your point of saying, well, maybe it's going to be a top 50 teams are in one league, the other, and the rest are in another league. How important is it going to be to get to the College Football Playoff to prove you're a top 50 team? Like, if UNLV, I think on the just looking at it right now, big point of view, I would say they're probably not a top 50 program. But if they can win the Mountain West and be the top ranked other conference and get in the College Football Playoff, does that really boost their resume? So in 2030, when the big move comes, if it's the top 50 in the rest, they can make it to the top 50. Is that like a viable way for them to get into, like, you know, the stay in the relevant teams?
I don't know. And I, you know, I think some of this, though, might just be that some of the university presidents are, you know, they like the evil they know. You know what I mean? Like, and they're not moving unless it's a no-brainer move. Let's go to Mark, who's in Beaverton. Mark in Beaverton, go ahead.
Hey, John, thanks. So, you know, any conversation that you have with Steven and us listeners and everything, the foundation is, this is all speculation. There's no way we can predict the future at all. What I love about Teresa is, first of all, she is the antithesis of slowpoke George. George, like, waited, got an offer, should have took it, didn't take it, rest is history. She is going balls to the wall, trying to get as many teams as she can early, knowing that she's got 9 months until next June, which is going to be here before we know it. But better to be on the aggressive now and get as many teams as you can instead of it being May 15th of next year and, you know, we only have like 2 teams or 4 teams. So I think that she is so aggressive, and that's just her DNA, that she was like, okay, the American Conference teams, you don't want to go? Okay, great. I didn't think you would anyway. I wouldn't be surprised if she already knew that. And then she goes, like you said, to the next tier. UNLV, no, we don't want to go. Okay, let's go to Utah State. If everybody says no right now, okay, no big deal. She still has 6 to 9 months to repivot and go with, you know, another tier. So
yes,
I'm not worried at all.
Yeah, I also can say this. I want to throw this out there. I am being told by a reliable Pac-12 source that UNLV also has an offer from the Pac-12 conference, despite the report from Pete Thamel. I'm not saying Thamel's wrong, but I'm rereading Thamel's tweet now, knowing that UNLV has agreed to commit to the Mountain West for future membership is not airtight. UNLV apparently does have an offer from the Pac-12 on the table. I'm trying to discern whether the Pac-12 offer has been rebuffed or not. I do not know that to 100% yet, though, so we will find out. Guys, welcome to my world. You can't eat, you can't drink, you can't use the bathroom. You better keep your phone in your hand at all times, and you have to kind of be listening to multiple people at once. But I got a note at 3:26, 10 minutes ago, saying that UNLV and Utah State both have Pac-12 offers. I asked the sources, UNLV off the table, citing the report from Pete Thamel, and I am being told stand by. So I will get you an answer on that. But Utah State has an offer from the Pac-12 conference, and we shall see. You know, maybe UNLV is playing both sides. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this right now, but you're in on it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, who knows? We might have conference realignment done by the end of the commercial break. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I can tell you that a source in the Mountain West Conference told me during the commercial break that they believe UNLV is in the fold. I can simultaneously tell you that as of 2 hours ago, the Pac-12 had an offer out to UNLV and would be surprised that UNLV would already be turning around. I kind of think that Utah State is going to sign with the Pac-12. They very much are interested in a different future than where they've been. They are pro-growth. That's interesting. They do bring the fifth best media market. Pac-12 would have taken the five top viewership schools out of the Mountain West. But we shall see. If UNLV stays in the Mountain West, feels like there would be a pause here. Well, they figure out who gets the eighth spot. What do they do with that eighth spot? Because you could do a lot of creative and different things with that final spot in the Pac-12. This is not how I think the Pac-12 drew it up this morning, but I am being told by a reliable source in the Mountain West that UNLV, they believe UNLV is solid, Stephen, to answer our question going into the break. I also think that Utah State, the Pac-12 is very confident they're getting Utah State at this point. We shall see.
There are different reports also out. You know, Nicole Auerbach has kind of confirmed what everyone was saying, and it says Pete Thamel is saying Utah State is expected to take that offer from the Pac-12. So just like you just said right there, it seems like Utah State will be in the Pac-12 and UNLV will be staying in the Mountain West.
Yep. So there you go. If UNLV stays, then that's school number eight. But I am told that UNLV and Utah State were offered almost in conjunction the seventh and eighth spots. So I can confirm that. And interesting to see others out there who are confirming it. So Pete Thamel, now, so give me what Thamel's saying so I don't have to refresh here.
So Pete Thamel first reported that UNLV is staying in the Mountain West, and now he is saying, sources are saying Utah State is expected to take its offer from the Pac-12, and the confirmation of accepting the offer is expected very soon. So he's confirming kind of what you have just said right there.
So Utah State is school number seven. School number eight to be determined. And, you know, I believe what the Pac-12 will now do is I think they will pause here and they'll go, okay, we digested this next round. They whiffed a swing and a miss on Memphis, Tulane, South Florida, UNLV. Looks like Air Force is recommitting to the Mountain West. I don't understand Air Force. If I'm Air Force, I go to the American. I want to be with Army and Navy. Put the service academies together. And, you know, you want those three together. They're worth more together. But Air Force apparently happy where they are and staying where they are.
Do you think the other schools in the American are still available to talk to for the Pac-12?
I find it interesting that, you know, but the all the American schools kind of put their logos, at least, on what the conference sent out. But who's doing that? Some social media guy for the conference, right? So I found it interesting that the Pac-12 told me that they only offered three schools from the American, not four. And yet UTSA was in there going, we're staying as well. And like, I was going, well, nobody asked you. Like, you were not being invited. They did not get the terms that South Florida and Memphis and Tulane got this morning. So I find that a little interesting. Development.
Do you think that the Pac-12, because they still need at least one more school to get to that eight number, are they going to be looking more on the West Coast, or could they be going to, you know, the middle of the country in Texas, or, you know,
they could go anywhere. I think you go anywhere to get the best possible school that you can get. Hell, they can go get James Madison if they want. You know what I mean? But I just think from a competitive standpoint, now you look at Gonzaga as well. As long as you're going to layer in an eighth school and you want to add some value, does Gonzaga coming into the fold add some value for the Pac-12?
Doesn't it, though? Because I feel like at this point, we're just talking about teams joining conferences, and it's all about the value that they bring. Like Utah State, yeah, they bring a little bit of value. If you're just talking about any type of value and brand name, Gonzaga's the one. Like, I understand they don't have football, but if you get them for the conference, they at least are a brand name that will, you know, move that conference in one of the major sports.
I had a friend who texted me, is this like when the Pac-12 tried to get Texas and ended up with Colorado and Utah? You know, remember how that felt back in the day when the Pac-10 was making the moves? But I don't know. Yeah, I think to your Gonzaga point, yes, it adds value, but you have to also view it through the prism of, hey, what is a basketball school worth in a football world? And because it's a football world, and I thought it was really interesting the way that erroneous tweet went out this morning, that two things jumped out at me that were kind of backhanded slaps. One was, it's a full share. It's getting a full share. Like, a basketball school is worth just as much as the football schools in the Pac-12. So there was a dig at the Pac-12 in that tweet. The second one was pointing out that Gonzaga, is a basketball school. It's basically just underscoring the idea. You know, like, it was a slap at, that part was a slap at Gonzaga. The second part, the full share part, was a slap at the Pac-12. And so to me, I read that tweet and I went, huh. And then as I called Gonzaga and I called the Pac-12 and I tried to get confirmation of these things, you know, I very much, was told that, you know, none of this was true and nothing was close and everybody was puzzled by it. And so I kind of just wondered, like, you know, is that a consulting firm? And I wasn't the only one that pointed that out. And or is it somebody else who's mad at Gonzaga for not taking a half share in the Big 12, right? So we shall see what happens on that front. I have another question for you, Steven. It's a little off topic, but it's still college football and college related. And it relates to Kalen DeBoer and his time at Washington. I want to pepper you with this. Our old friend Chip Towers of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution asked me for, you know, he said, you watched Kalen DeBoer coach. And he asked me kind of for a quote that he wants to put in his story about Kalen DeBoer. And I immediately went to the idea, you know, that Kalen DeBoer's teams always seem to get better. He got better last year. They got better from when they played Oregon in week five or six to the end of the season. They were better. Washington got better and better and better. And I think relative to Oregon, that was that jumped out at me. What would you say about Kalen DeBoer if a reporter from Atlanta who's doing a story on Georgia and Alabama playing, that reporter says, hey, tell us about Kalen DeBoer. What would you tell them?
I would say he puts his players in the right positions every single time based off their strengths. Because you saw what he did at Fresno State. It's not like they were the most talented of teams, but he would get them to win games. Michael Penix Jr., while he was a big-time, you know, big-time-ish transfer coming from Indiana, nobody thought that he was going to be in the Heisman Trophy candidate race. No one thought he was going to be a first-round draft pick. Kalen DeBoer completely put him in the right spot and went to his strengths. His strengths was throwing the football down the field, and it was the Rome Odunze. Now, he had guys like Rome, who was, you know, top 10 pick, who's awesome, who's great, but he put them in the right spots and called the right exact plays. I think he's doing that at Alabama. Jalen Milroe has a lot of strengths. He also has a lot of deficiencies, but he's putting him in the right spots to succeed as well. So I think that it's almost like the kind of going back to the Mike Riley days at Oregon State. He always got the best of all of his players, and he always thought, man, if he gets the best talent, like maybe he can, you know, go to the next level. It didn't work when he went to Nebraska, and I think DeBoer's a little bit different. I think DeBoer's better than Riley was, but it's the same type of idea where he's going to put the guys in their strengths, and he's going to use utilize that to win ball games.
I am looking at the teams that he coached. He won everywhere he's ever been. You know, he won before Fresno State. He won at Fresno State. He won after Fresno State. Kalen DeBoer will win games. But I always think, like, it was the marker, and I remember this for years, it was the marker of kind of like that coaching staff at Oregon that featured the great assistant coaches like Nick Aliotti and Gary Campbell and Steve Greatwood and, you know, that coaching tree that was, you know, Don Pelham. That they had 30 years of experience. At the end of a season, Oregon was better than at the beginning of the season. I go to Mike Riley's teams. They were often clunky at the beginning of the year. You know, there were some scares against Eastern Washington and Sacramento State and Portland State with Mike Riley coaching. But at the end of the year, that was a team that, you know, could turn the lights out on USC, right? Like, you know, we've seen it. And would play really good football or win 8 or 9 or 10 games in a given year. They got better. That's just good coaching. I think Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach. I wonder, without Ryan Grubb, you know, he goes off to the NFL to be a play caller. I wonder if Kalen DeBoer is the same coach or not. We're going to find out. But I also am just left thinking a lot about those other coaches who, you know, for years just got their teams better and better and better. And so we shall see, you know, what Kalen DeBoer does at Alabama. And by the way, will the Alabama fans be forgiving if he loses some big games? They're not, you know, they're not used to. They've lost big games, but they're not used to losing big games. And will a 2-loss or a 3-loss season by Kalen DeBoer be too much for the Alabama fan to handle?
Well,
I don't know.
We'll find out this week. We'll find out this week. They play Georgia at Alabama. That's a game that, you know what, you're right. Alabama fans are going to expect to win, and Georgia has looked the part so far. Alabama, they've had a little bit of a struggle so far this season against teams like South Florida. But you're right. If Alabama goes in, loses that game by 10 points, are those fans going to give DeBoer another chance? We'll find out.
Alabama's a home dog in this game. Who's got more pressure in that showdown, Alabama or Georgia?
I think Bama. I think Bama's got it. Georgia has the reputation already where if they lose a game, they'll be fine. I think you're right with the DeBoer hire. There's still some questions of, you know, just I think out there, is he the guy? Is that Alabama team? Was it just Nick Saban that brought him all the way? I think he needs to prove, like, yeah, I'm the guy. I got the players. We are one of the top 12 teams. I think Georgia's going to get the, you know, the benefit of the doubt.
I think Georgia, I think the pressure's on Georgia. And I don't think they mind. I mean, they've got a target on them and have had a target on them, you know, for like four seasons. But Georgia's the higher ranked team. Georgia, you know, is not first year head coach situation. You know, I think Alabama knows, you know, that they can, they're probably, you know, they're viewed as a home dog in this game. I think the pressure's on Georgia. I'll be curious to see how that plays out. But, you know, we'll give our picks on Thursday. That's kind of how I see it. All right, coming up, I'm going to pivot a little bit. We'll stay on this realignment stuff, but I feel like you and I need a little diversion. And so I'm going to give you a wonderful diversion from what we've been talking about in the next segment.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I'm telling you, I barely have time to get a drink of water. I'm not complaining. I'm just explaining. And we don't know what's going to happen next when it comes to realignment. I knew it would be that kind of day. I was warned yesterday that it was going to be a big Monday as it pertained to the Pac-12 and realignment. Just to recap, the Pac-12 conference this morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time presented terms to Memphis, Tulane, and South Florida. The Pac-12 was reluctant to pay very much of the exit fees, in particular for Memphis. Memphis wanted a huge chunk of the exit fees to be paid for. Pac-12 would only guarantee $2.5 million towards the exit fees. Memphis, Tulane, and South Florida rebuffed the offer, say that they're staying in the American for now. Pac-12 pivoted very quickly, offering UNLV and Utah State membership. This all happened about 3:25. Very quickly, Pete Thamel of ESPN reports that UNLV is committed to staying in the Mountain West. Thought that was interesting that there was no mention of Utah State. I then confirmed with a source that Utah State had been offered membership. They are expected to join the Pac-12 conference. I've been told by a source that they would be surprised if Utah State did not sign with the Pac-12. Pretty confident was the retort, but nothing's done until it's done. What happens after that? I'll tell you later in the show because it might happen during the show. I want to take a little break from the insanity. I think it's good to have perspective in life. I started Friday's show by talking about perspective. If you caught Friday's show, you heard me talking about why it's important to leave messages, phone messages. And I talked about a woman who has a former Cal women's basketball player named Lex Helgerson, who after college chased a career as an actress and a singer and a filmmaker. She has made a documentary about her father called Age Group Winner. Helgerson grew up in Portland. The movie is going to be screened for people who want to see it. Cinema 21 in Portland, October 5th. Grab a ticket for that 70-minute documentary film. And the film's about her dad, her relationship with her dad. Her dad is a marathoner and plural, who ran in 1980 a marathon every week. The guy ran a marathon every week. It is incredible to think about it and to think about the commitment you have to have and the focus you have to have. And Jay Helgerson, though, is still running marathons. He'll turn 70 in February. He's going to run the Boston Marathon this next year. And his daughter, Lex Helgerson, is joining us now to talk about the movie that she made about her dad. Did I summarize that okay? Did I do okay with that?
Perfectly. Perfectly, John. Thank you.
Tell us why you wanted to make this movie. What was this really about for you?
My dad was the stay-at-home parent when my sisters and I were young, so we had a close relationship and a bond through sports. And becoming an artist, I felt like our bond suffered a bit. And then maturing into adulthood, seeing my parents get older, I realized, you know, they're not going to be around forever. And my dad's really funny, and he's quirky, he's charismatic. He did this unique thing, which, you know, my sisters and I growing up, we just thought, well, that's our dad. But it actually is pretty remarkable that he has run all these marathons and did set this record, world record, in 1980. So filming him just was a way to connect, really. I love movies. I'm an actor, and yeah, it was a means of communicating. Yeah.
Give me an idea of watching somebody you care about, you know, take on a task like running a marathon every week. What is that like?
Well, he did it before I was born, so I didn't witness it firsthand, but what was really cool in making this movie is that I finally got around to beginning to edit in 2021, and had been editing for months and months and months, and my husband and I had just moved back to Portland, and after months of editing and years of working on the film at this point, my dad finally comes to our house, and he's like, with the old Portland recycling bins, the yellow bins, he gives me two of these bins full of photographs, newspaper clippings from 1980. I'd never seen these in my life, nor in the process of making this film. And I was like, Dad, I've been working on this, you know, for 6 years. Where have these been? So that was really moving to receive. I was glad he'd kept everything. I was glad, grateful my mom had done a good job of documenting, and included were also photos from his childhood that I'd never seen before. So that was really, really exciting for the film. Because it shifted my editing process and storytelling process, and it was exciting for me as a daughter and a person. So that was cool.
I am a sentimental person, and I know this because, you know, I like memorabilia, and I also on my phone have all these voicemail messages from people who have passed away, like Bill Shonley, the legendary broadcaster for the Blazers, and Mike Leach, who was a coach, college football coach. And so I keep these voicemails. I don't have the heart to delete them. I can't do it. You used your father's voicemail messages in the film to kind of sew together the movie. I think it was really smart and clever. When did that occur to you?
That, I think it mostly occurred in 2020, like at the height of COVID. I was filing a lot, doing a lot of filing, as one maybe did in 2020. And although I knew I had been saving them, on my phone, because some of them were really funny. Like he can kind of adapt into this Southern drawl. My sister lived in New Orleans for a while. You know, he'd leave funny messages visiting her down there. Or he'd comment on the news or what was happening in sports. He loved sports. And so there were, it's like a history deck in a way. So I just kept saving them. And then filing in 2020, I was like, you know what? Yeah, these are great. But it was a lot of archival, you know, time getting the voicemails off of my phone, filing them on the computer, and listening, like, what is useful, what helps with the story, what's worthwhile.
We're talking to Lex Helgerson, former Cal women's basketball player who has become a filmmaker. The movie is Age Group Winner. It will air on October 5th at Cinema 21 in Portland. Are there other places people can find the movie, or how does that work? Help educate us on that.
Not yet. I'm I'm in the process of sales and distribution, and right now it's Cinema 21, October 5th.
Oh,
and
I like
after that, to be determined, yeah.
What's that going to be like for you? Because I know you've screened it with friends and family, but will you go and sneak in and watch in a live audience receive it for the first time?
I will. I have seen. We showed it in February. We showed it a couple times at Cinema 21. And so I have seen it with a live audience. And each time, I feel like it's been better and better. For me, maybe, as a person, maybe I have more distance or feel more equipped to talk about it. And also coming back from cancer, as you know, I was diagnosed a year ago. So we showed it in the spring, kind of coming back from chemo, and now I'm even more back and wanting to show it with the Portland Marathon. And so I will be there because I like seeing people and talking about it and yeah, seeing people's reactions.
Give me an idea, you know, when you were a basketball player at Cal, I mean, it's just such an important and interesting interview because we've been talking about realignment. Cal's now in the ACC. I'm curious to know, like, you know, what those road trips will look like in women's basketball. But what did you get out of that experience playing basketball there?
I'm just shaking my head at the road trips because it's so far to travel so frequently. I got so much out of my experience playing basketball at Cal. I'm still close with many of my teammates. You're like a family, very much so. And there's nothing like it. It's a job. It's a total commitment. It taught me more about hard work and sacrifice and respect and how working together as a team, the team can accomplish anything. I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche, but it's really true when it's fully functioning, you know, John Wooden style.
And I have to think of that time. Were you entertaining the idea of being an actor, being a filmmaker, being an artist, a singer, musician? Where was your head at that time?
It was leaving the court, I can tell you that. That is the other thing. Like, I have so much respect for athletes, for student athletes especially, because so much is demanded of you. And you have to be, I watch NCAA women's basketball today, and like, these women are so mature and so confident and like knowledgeable of themselves. I was not that at all. And it's really cool to experience as a fan now, 20 years later. So my head and heart, I mean, I loved the game so much growing up, but maturing into adulthood, I was ready to experience different parts of the world. Sometimes during practice, I would sing, actually, terribly, you know, but it would help get me through. And I wanted to take acting classes in college, but was too afraid. It was not how I saw myself. So it took a little time after college to make that leap.
Lex Helgerson is with us, former Cal women's basketball player who has made a cool movie about her relationship with her father. It's called Age Group Winner, Cinema 21 in Portland on October 5th. If you'd like to see a screening of this movie, what's next for you beyond this? Do you want to be a producer? Do you want to, you know, create other films? I know that you have acted in a variety of settings, but you know, where's your passion right now?
It's in a couple places. I'm working on my debut album, actually, so that's really exciting. We begin recording October 10th, so I am in pre-production for that and have a great group of musicians I'm playing with here in Portland, and I'm very excited about that. And a feature film I acted in right before my diagnosis last year is going to premiere at a festival in LA next month, and I'll be there for that. It's the LA Femme International Film Festival. The film is called Happy Ending. It was an awesome experience also here in Portland. So I'm excited to act more. I'm excited to make this album and make more films, be them documentaries or feature narrative films.
Well, I want to thank you for this movie. And I want to thank you for doing it, and I want to thank you for talking about it, because I think a lot of parents who are listening to this, myself included, you know, I'm constantly three daughters trying to meet them where they are. They're all different. They're, you know, their love languages are different. The things they're interested in are different. You know, one of them wants to wrestle around and play Legos. The other one wants to talk to you about her science fair project. You know, it's, they're just different. And I think it's a great example of, you know, I haven't often thought about their experience, and hearing you talk about wanting to connect with your dad, I think is really interesting and affirming for a father of a daughter.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear, and it's cool. It's just as important to hear that you can recognize how different your daughters are and your desire and willingness to speak their love languages and connect with them in ways that are meaningful and make them feel seen. That's what matters.
Lex, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you. Good luck with the screening. For people who want to see it, October 5th, Cinema 21 in Portland. And the movie's called Age Group Winner. Thank you, Lex.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye. Good stuff. Different. I told you it'd be different. Steven, I think you needed that. I think you needed a reminder that it's not all about realignment. It's not all about the millions of dollars. Sometimes it's as simple as a daughter trying to connect with her dad, who is a diehard runner. And it's not that different than my daughters, who humor me by talking about football or asking me about football, or will come and say, you know, who's going to be in the Pac-12, Dad, and have a discussion about it. They seem to roll with it. I think young people, you know, it's just an easier adjustment. Who's in the Pac-12? Who's not in the Pac-12? You know, are they still going to play each other? Okay, that's enough for them. But good stuff from our guest, Lex Helgerson, who people may remember from Jesuit High School in Portland and then also St. Mary's Academy and later UC Berkeley playing women's college basketball. All right, Punch It Audio is coming up. We'll give you the latest. I think Utah State's going to end up in the Pac-12. I don't have it confirmed yet. I do know they have been offered membership, and that the Pac-12 is encouraged and confident that Utah State is going to accept membership. I am told the word that was used was confident that Utah State will sign with the Pac-12. They're super committed to growth and investment, and their donors, get this, are willing to pay to get them into the conference. I think that is a big factor in a world where money seems to matter. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I still got to think of a good, clever thing to tell Chip Towers at the Atlanta Journal Constitution about Kalen DeBoer. I don't mind if you slip into my DMs with a suggestion, but I'm leaning towards telling him, you know, he's asking for a quote because he's writing this story about Kalen DeBoer and what Georgia's up against this week. But, you know, DeBoer came on the show a few times, Steven. I don't know if you remember any of those interviews, but he came on the show, and I thought one time in particular he talked about his daughter and being just a dad, a softball dad, and all that stuff. He's, like, humanizing himself. And then in the end, you know, I think we all know that he kind of ended up just being a football coach interested in going where the biggest contract was. But before he did that, I was kind of impressed with the kind of down-home, aw shucks feel of Kalen DeBoer to a certain extent. Thought that was interesting. So we shall see how that unfolds. We're going to keep you updated on the Pac-12. I am told that the Pac-12 is extended an offer. It's not yet done. I'm told that the offer to Utah State is expected to be accepted. We will see. I think on today's show, we may be able to confirm it at some point. In the meantime, we're going to play a little Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Shohei Ohtani. That's how it sounds. It's baseball.
One pitch. Ohtani smokes one right center field. Ohtani is inevitable.
53 for Ohtani. Season getting better and better. I think you could argue like Aaron Judge might win the Triple Crown. And yet Ohtani might be having the better season. It kind of reminds me when Joe DiMaggio won the Triple Crown, but everybody remembers Ted Williams hitting 406 in that season. Shohei Ohtani continues to get it done. Game-tying home run in the ninth. Speaking of big plays, how about Caleb Williams to Rome Dunze?
Low snap. Williams fields it to the end zone.
Caleb Williams' first TD. It was also Rome Odunze's first touchdown reception. Steven, who gets the ball? Who gets to keep the ball?
That's a good one. Got to default to the quarterback, right? Number one overall pick. I think you default to who was picked higher. So Caleb, in that instance, number one over number 10. I think you got to give it to Caleb. But do you make anything of that? That was the first touchdown pass thrown by a rookie quarterback this season. Already into week three, Bo Nix got his first win. He didn't throw a touchdown pass. Jane Daniels, the other starting rookie quarterback for the Commanders, he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass. That was the first one. Caleb and the Bears lost yesterday to the Colts. What do you make of that? Rookie quarterbacks really kind of struggling against the NFL teams within the first 3 weeks of the season.
I think given how pro offense the league is, it's surprising to see those guys struggling. But I think it's a reminder of like how difficult it is when you have bad teams picking good players. Like, you know, the quarterback gets the money, but that is a tough job if you don't have a lot around you. Speaking of Bo Nix, you know, he got his first career NFL win. And here's how it sounded.
You only get this moment one time. It's not easy winning games in this league. Just to do what we were able to do today against a really good football team, you know, it gives us a little bit of confidence moving forward. It's still a long season, but you got to enjoy these wins when they're here. It's a great first win.
Broncos 26, Buccaneers 7. A little bit of a surprise. Knocking a lot of people out of the survivor pool. More than 70% of players in the survivor pools are out. Broncos, Panthers, Giants all win in week three. Good night to your survival pool. Good start for Denver. Did enough down the stretch. And, you know, we're watching some weird things happen in the NFL. The 49ers are struggling with injuries. Gave away a game yesterday, but Bo Nix of the Broncos get one. Tom Brady, is he getting better? I think he is. Here's Brady talking about Lamar Jackson and a touchdown run.
Ravens are in shotgun. Lamar's a huge part of this running game. Just too hard to stop. How fast is Lamar? Fast.
How fast is he? He's fast, says Tom Brady. I don't mind it. I think he's getting better.
He was getting killed for that comment because everyone's like, yeah, we know Lamar is fast. Like, thanks for that advice there, Tom.
You know what? There's some justice, there's some poetry in Brady kind of getting a hard time. He's had a lot of times, I think, media and fans go easy on him. People are just kind of like, nope. And I love when he came on in the post game of that Cowboys game, Cowboys-Ravens game, and he joins kind of the Terry and the Michael Strahan crew, and they start by saying, good to see you, and he goes, oh, I wish I could see you. You're on a monitor. And it was just kind of awkward. He did fine, though. I thought he did okay. I want to be fair to him. I think a lot of people are not being fair. Stanford over Syracuse. Game-winning field goal.
Kenny, right down the middle, don't you know? wins its first game in the ACC, 26-24.
Stanford with a 1,000 win percentage in the ACC now. Getting a win, come from behind, nice drive, nice kick. Stanford walks off with the win. A wild two-point conversion as Washington State beats San Jose State in double overtime. This one on Friday night, Pac-12 After Dark on the CW.
Now Mateer ready. Looking left, comes off that read. Extends the play. Racing for the pylon. Must have two-point try for San Jose State to extend the game. Emmett Brown under duress. There goes the ball. And the Cougs are on it to improve to 4-0.
Cougs are 4-0. Unranked. They're number 26 if you count. Also receiving votes. Jake Dickert with some humility in the postgame.
An unbelievable win. You know, I think this is the first time since we've been together the last 3 years that we came back from a double-digit fourth quarter to win. Obviously, tremendous amount of errors. You know, I take full responsibility for a lot of coaching errors tonight. I told, Coach Nia Matalolo that, you know, I got out-coached tonight, and our guys pulled it through. The players won this game. The players went out there and made the plays. The players kept believing. They went out there and gritted it out. And I'm really proud of this football team. We will be better because we went through this tonight. I will be a better football coach for these guys because of what we went through tonight. And, I'm just really excited to get this win.
Washington State, 4-0. Get a big opportunity at Boise State in the next one.
What'd you make of San Jose State in that one? That my thought was watching that.
Fearless.
Oregon State, man, that's not, we kind of counted that as a win.
Yes.
I don't know, man. Oregon State, San Jose State, they play in a couple weeks.
San Jose State was fearless. I love their quarterback. He's a gamer. They've got a receiver who can play. San Jose State was not afraid. And I love to see that. And well-coached, not afraid. But the overtime and the double overtime were kind of messy, right? San Jose State throws a pick. Washington State comes back. All they have to do is run the football, kick a field goal. Steven, they have Mateer throwing, and he throws a pick.
And that's not his strength. I mean, I love John Mateer. I think he's a really electric player. But, man, he throwing the football is not his strength. Let him run the ball. Ran for over 100 yards, 500 yards of total offense. You know, 300-plus passing, over 100 rushing. Like, let him run the football. If you're going to try to get into that field goal, I'm with you. The pass was a weird call. I do wonder now, you know, how does that win look on national TV, on CW, standalone game? Washington State's still not ranked. Like, can they afford a loss and still get in the college football playoff? I really don't think so.
I studied it. I went and looked at it today because I was wondering that myself. So I went back and looked at every year that they have done a college football playoff ranking, and I tried to find examples of one-loss teams that in ask, would they be in the top 12? Because essentially, Washington State's got to get an at-large berth. So because they might have to be top 11. They might have to be top 10. But certainly top 12 is kind of the marker that you look at.
Because they cannot get an automatic bid, correct?
They cannot get an automatic bid because the conference only has two members. So you have to be a recognized conference. Pac-12 needs eight members to be recognized. So they're not eligible for an automatic qualifying berth. They can't get the G5 berth, so to speak. But they would have to get an at-large berth. And so I looked at one-loss teams that don't come from Power 5 conferences in prior years. Because I kind of think the committee's going to view Washington State through that prism, right? I think they're going to see them as a G5 kind of, you know, classification program. That's how they're going to view them. Because, you know, the Power 4 doesn't want to share. And so I looked at it, and what I found was the greatest example you can find is 2 years ago, Tulane. 2 years ago, Tulane was sitting at 16th at 8-1. So we're talking about at 9 games into their season, they were 16th in the playoff rankings. Now, they eventually end up at 10-2 and then 11-2 with a conference championship. And they end up getting in because they were the highest ranked G5 school. So they got the New Year's Six invitation. They didn't get into the playoff because it was only a 14 playoff. But I started to project that out and go, okay, you know, if they had ended up 11-1, I looked at who ended up in the 10 spot, in the 11 spot, in the 12 spot. That 12 spot went to a two-loss Washington team. So I think what you're essentially going to be talking about is, you know, will a two-loss team from the Big Ten or SEC be viewed as better than a one-loss team, Washington State? And I think the answer is yes. And I think that Washington State is, you're clearly on the bubble, best case scenario. And worst case scenario, I think your ceiling is about 14 or 15 in the polls, having one loss if you're Washington State. Some of it is they're just playing a bunch of, you know, G5 schools down the stretch. And while they're doing that, all those teams that are second and third in the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be playing each other. And so I just think the perception may be too much to get over. But one loss, Stephen, I'll say this. They'll be on the bubble, and we'll be watching the reveal every week going, did they make up ground? They're at 14. Did they get to 13? Can they get to 12? Do they need a loss? Do they need some help to get into the top 12? It's not a place you want to be if you're Jake Dickert. Just go win all the games, you know? Because if they win them all, there's no way they're kept out. They would be they'd be a top 12 team, and the precedent says so, but you would really need, you know, 2 and 3 lost teams in the Big Ten and SEC are going to be your comparison.
You also need to have Boise State continue winning. You need to have Oregon State continue winning because you play both of those teams. You know, if Oregon State finishes 9-3 and Boise State's 10-2, and Washington State has wins over those teams, those are going to look big. And, you know, if they lose to a Boise State or something, they're 11-1, but it's a close game, and Boise State's 11-1, 10-2 on the season, I think that can be okay. And you're right, they'll be right on the bubble, but I just had to think at one loss, they're going to put in a team from the SEC or the Big Ten or the Big 12 ACC over a Washington State team.
We shall see. Moving on, Lincoln Riley at USC. What a disappointing first half. Gave Michigan a touchdown, didn't play well, came back in the second half, made it a game.
Didn't play particularly good in the first half. Struggled to get much going offensively. Defensively, you know, we had a couple of just big plays where we came out of gap. And that was really kind of the story of the first half. The guys rallied. We did some really, really good things in the second half as a football team. Had a couple opportunities to close the door and finished one play short. There was a real battle out there, tremendous atmosphere. Two good teams going at it. We're obviously very disappointed, but know the season, there's a lot left in it. A long ways to go. I like the team. I like the team I got in that locker room. There's a bunch of fighters in that room. A bunch of guys are going to get better quickly. And I look forward to getting back and getting to our prep for Wisconsin.
Got to get ready. Got to get back. Disappointing finish for USC. I was really underwhelmed with them in the first half. And in the second half, they just let Michigan back into the game at the end. It was really weird to see. Meanwhile, Utah, starting to think Utah's a well-coached team. Kyle Whittingham and Utah go on the road to Oklahoma State and get a win.
Good start to the Big 12 conference play in our game down or over in Stillwater. Proud of our guys. A lot of positive takeaways from that game. Obviously, the freshman quarterback, Isaac Wilson, did what we needed him to do, took another step forward in his progression. And for him to go into, well, our team, but him playing quarterback into the number 14 ranked team in the country's stadium, hostile environment, and come away with a win, that was great to see happen. And so very proud of him.
Got enough out of Isaac Wilson, 207 yards and a touchdown. Micah Bernard had 182 rushing yards for Utah. Brent Keithy, the tight end for Utah. Andy Ludwig, the coordinator there with the Utes, got him in the backfield and got him a rushing touchdown. I mean, Utah just finds a way. And I hate to harp on this every week. I mean, we're just watching great coaching overcome injuries. And Cam Rising remains a question mark for the Utes. Joel Klatt talking about Chip Kelly's fingerprints. Have you seen them? They're on Ohio State's run game.
What impressed me more than anything was the two running backs. Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson are elite players. And then the run game, you're starting to see now Chip Kelly in this run game. You're starting to see some schematics and run game styles that they just didn't have before. Inside counter, little delayed gap schemes, and it's like, oh man, this stuff is really good, tough to stop for a defense, in particular Marshall, which by the way was the best defense that Ohio State had faced to date, but obviously that game wasn't going to be in doubt. the run game, the physicality of Judkins, the physicality of Henderson. Both of them had long touchdown runs where they stiff-armed someone to the ground and ran to the end zone. So it's like dealing with these guys is not going to be easy for anybody on defense.
Look, Ohio State looks great. I tried in my mind as I was watching Ohio State play, imagine how they compare with Oregon, of course, because October 12th is looming. But I had a hard time doing that. I think Ohio State's better. I think Ohio State has better weapons. I think they're a little more physical. But I'm watching them against inferior competition. Again, it's the same question we kind of had early for Oregon. Oregon was, in a lot of ways, underwhelming. Are we undervaluing Idaho? Are we undervaluing Boise State? Like, in the end, will the story of this season be that Oregon played two pretty good schools right out of the gates in the first couple weeks of the season? And that, you know, that said more about those schools than Oregon? I don't know. But October 12th looms. Leave it here. You got the BFT. We'll get you caught up on what else is going on next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon will play a Big Ten Conference football game on Saturday at the Rose Bowl. How about them apples? Against UCLA. That's a Big Ten game. I'll have you covered all week long as it pertains to college football and sports in your region and the stuff you're interested in at johncanzano.com. The Monday mailbag had to be delayed because of all the expansion palooza going on today. I haven't yet figured out if the Pac-12 came on too strong, misplayed its hand, or needed Memphis, Tulane, South Florida, needed all that stuff done, so it had to accelerate through that to get to UNLV and Utah State and some of the others. I'm also not convinced any of this is final until it's final. What do I mean by that? Well, we were told, if we can learn from the last round of expansion, that the Pac-12 schools were all committed, that they weren't going anywhere, that they had agreed upon a grant of rights with each other, even though the grant of rights wasn't signed with a media company. And then what happened on that fateful morning as Oregon and Washington and everybody else ran for the hills? Oregon State, Washington State got left behind. So if I've learned anything from any of this, it's let's wait and see until things get signed. Multiple reports out there about Memphis, Tulane, and South Florida being happy in the American. Also, Utah State expected to go to the Pac-12. That would be a big deal in that region. Josh Furlong of KSL and the Deseret News there in Salt Lake City telling me, I said, you know, how does Utah State move the needle in that media market? What's the readership like at the Salt Lake newspaper as it pertains to Utah State? Compare it to Utah. He said about a third of the buzz of Utah. But he thinks that the joining the Pac-12 would be well received by people at Utah State. Utah State is aggressive. I can tell you that, you know, of all the schools that I was exploring and talking with, I got the most, I got a little SMU vibe from Utah State that was surprised me a little bit because I was not aware, like, you know, that donor base had a lot of money to throw around or was interested in picking up some of the expansion, you know, fees or the exit fees. I was not aware of any of that. But I ended up in a position where I was being told and being sold on the idea of Utah State to the Pac-12 with things like, hey, we've got 10 win seasons. We got three of them since 2012. Hey, by the way, when you look at viewership, Utah State is the number 5 team in the Mountain West Conference as it pertains to TV viewership. So that would mean that the Pac-12 took the top 5 schools if it's getting Utah State. So it was trying to position itself and argue that it was more attractive than UNLV because the thinking was that the Pac-12 was only going to take one more school out of the Mountain West. I am left wondering now if it was a mistake not to take six out of the Mountain West and just call it good under the cover of night last, what, Wednesday or two Wednesdays ago. Because think about it. Now you have UNLV essentially playing the Pac-12 against the money that the Pac-12 is going to pay the Mountain West. Gloria Navarez, the Mountain West commissioner, is not dumb. She's saying to UNLV and to Air Force, stay in my conference. Keep it together. I've got money because these schools are paying $100 million in exit fees and penalties, and I'm going to use that money to help retain these schools. It does leave the Mountain West with seven members. And the Pac-12's got seven members. And here we are in a staring contest. Who can get the eighth member, and who is that eighth member? Or is there an eighth and a ninth that's out there somewhere for somebody to go get? Could Memphis and Tulane backstab the Pac-12 and the American and go to the Mountain West? I don't think so. Ultimately, I think the best thing for everybody would be the group of five schools that all have value, merit-based, total meritocracy, get together, band together. But we shall see how this unfolds.
What about a team like Hawaii, who is a football-only member for the Mountain West?
No, no value.
But wait, what if you combine them with like a Gonzaga?
It's hard because Hawaii is such a bad travel partner that the Mountain West Conference has to subsidize other schools to go play at Hawaii. And for people who have seen Hawaii's football stadium, it's not that great old stadium that they played the Pro Bowl in anymore. Hawaii now does not have a stadium. They're playing on their own campus. They've got portable stands that are set up. It's why Oregon canceled their game there, because Oregon was like, you know, you guys can't afford to pay us, you know, to come play here, and we're not interested in it. And that's why Oregon bowed out of that game and will not go there. I don't think Hawaii, I kind of worry about Hawaii, because I think, like, if you're really rooting for Hawaii football to make it, you have to be rooting for the Mountain West to survive. I don't think Hawaii is an option. Unless you're just in dire straits and you want to kill the Mountain West for once and all, you know, maybe you take one school from them. But I kind of think this isn't over, Stephen. I think that there is a Pac-12 move to be made, a Mountain West move to be made. The jockeying between these two conferences is going to be wild, I think, in the coming days. And I don't think this is going to be settled tonight, and I don't think it's going to be settled tomorrow. I think it is a Mountain West versus Pac-12 battle right now, and it was probably a battle. It's one of these, it's like when you watch like Game of Thrones or you're watching a movie. Do you ever see a scene where like the bad guy is, he gets hit over the head and he's laying on the ground, but you know he's not dead? And then you're just waiting for him to get up in the background while the protagonist of the movie has his back turned. And you're yelling, no! Like, you ever seen that, Steven? It happens all the time in cinema. Like, just do away with it and get out of the house. And I think the Pac-12, did they misfire by not getting UNLV in that initial bite? And did they misfire by talking about it too long in the last week or so? Should they just have moved rapidly immediately after getting those schools and gone after who they wanted instead of sitting around talking about it? I do not know. But it does look like a bit of a misfire by the Pac-12. I'll be curious to see how they spin out of it and how they finish this off. But we'll see. Hawaii is a no. Throw other ideas at me. Hawaii be at the bottom of the list. San Jose State, bottom of the list.
I was just trying to think, because Gonzaga is a basketball only, right? And so they would provide nothing for basketball, where Hawaii already is a Mountain West football only. So I was just kind of like, that was my thought process behind
it. So as a total fallback, you're going to take Gonzaga. You got to make it work. You have no other way to make it work. Maybe you get Hawaii. But
at that point, Gonzaga would probably say no also to the Pac-12.
I just don't, you know, I've covered Hawaii. I've been involved in a lot of conversations in the last couple of months about what the Pac-12 will do, and talked to a lot of people who are a lot smarter than I am as it pertains to college football and how these decisions are made. But I am left, underwhelmed by the idea of Hawaii. I do think, like, it, you know, look, if you're going to go into the Mountain West, this is assuming that Utah State is leaving the Mountain West. Because if Utah State leaves the Mountain West then it drops to seven teams. Does that destabilize the Mountain West to the position that the Mountain West has to let go of UNLV?
Well, because the thing is that they're both at seven, and I look at the Mountain West, and if UNLV is staying and San Jose State is a no, like Air Force is probably either the Mountain West or the American, so they're a no as well for the Pac-12. It would have to be outside the conference, outside of the Mountain West you're looking at. And for me, it would be a team, like you said, even a James Madison. Could you go FCS route and get the Dakotas? Like, do something
okay,
like that.
Okay, but here's that has come up. I want to explain to people. It used to be that FCS teams had to pay a $5,000 fee to join the 132 schools that are in the FBS, okay? So it was $5,000. The new rules say that you have to pay $5 million. So you could do it, but you would need $5 million. And that was essentially all of the schools that are getting college football playoff payouts are basically saying, we don't want to pay anybody else. So they raised that fee to the point where like a Portland State would have to pay $5 million to join the upper level of college athletics. Not that they could do it. They don't have a stadium either. But I'm just saying, hypothetically, Montana State, Sacramento State, it's $5 million, not $5,000 to move up to FBS. I'm not saying it's unthinkable, but there is a deterrent there that is a financial deterrent that is set there intentionally by the rest of college football, the whole FBS division, basically saying, we don't want to share anymore. We don't want any more mouths to feed. We got enough. We got enough problems here. And this is not only to say this, like Rutgers, Vanderbilt, Northwestern, even to a certain extent, like some of the non-competitive schools in the Power Two, their day's coming too. And I just think we're going through this right now. We're going to be going through it again in 4 or 5 years on a large scale. Leave it here. The 5 at 5 is next.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Anna has joined the studio. Anna, before we get into the 5 at 5, what's your take on what's going on with the Pac-12 and expansion, not getting Memphis, not getting Tulane, not getting South Florida? Looks like UNLV likely headed back to the Mountain West Conference. Pac-12 probably getting Utah State, leaving it one school shy of what it needs to be, 8 members. What's you're grimacing. Give me your, like, what is on your mind right now? Let it out.
I'm confused because from a brand standpoint, I don't understand why this was even floated. Like the possibility of these schools joining and the offer put out was floated, unless they knew it was a sealed deal, because I think it reflects poorly on them. It makes it look like they asked somebody on a date, or it's like they proposed in public and they were turned down.
Yeah.
That's my initial take.
What did we learn? I'm trying to ask myself, what did we learn from the last time the Pac-12 went through all that drama? And I'm trying to remember, like, the lessons that I was thinking about, like, the day after it all happened. It was stuff like, you know, these university presidents, ultimately everybody did what was best for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing was, like, nothing was done until it was done. No matter what they said publicly, you know, when it came time to actually put ink to paper, that's when people made the decisions.
Yeah.
So today, some of the speculation, like, you know, Memphis, Tulane, South Florida saying, you know, issuing the public proclamation, UNLV leaking to a reporter, hey, you know, they plan to sign, Utah State saying they're out. I'm left kind of going, yeah, let's see when you sign. Like, let me know when you've signed something.
Right. Right. We've learned to not really, you know, trust anything because there's so much reporting out there that is a lot of speculation. And so, you know, it's kind of like you got to wait and see what happens when the ink's actually dry and the signature's on the contract.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. But then I also wondered, like, okay, was this good? Was this bad? Did the three schools make the right decision not joining the Pac-12? You know, how bad is that really? And what's next? That's, you know, those were the things that were on my mind today.
Yeah, Mountain West Conference source telling me they think that they are solid on UNLV, that they're retaining UNLV. That would give them 7 members. The Pac-12 have 7. Neither one has 8. They would need 8 members to be a conference. So they are stuck right now in a standoff. That brings us to the 5 biggest stories in sports. Anna's got them. Let's go.
The 5 at 5.
Here we go.
Number 1.
Do I dare go there? Everyone's talking about Travis Kelce. And in some respect, Patrick Mahomes. Yes, they're 3-0 so far in the season, but there's a lot of chatter about what has happened to Travis Kelce. There's literally commentators saying he's not good anymore, which I feel like is a little bit of an overreaction. And then the very next statement is, where's Taylor Swift? Is everything okay in Taylor Swift's, you know, life and their relationship? I don't want to go there yet. But there's a lot of chatter about it. There's shots of him looking sad on the bench, and just the discussion about his lackluster performance in this first 3 games of the season.
I'm glad that he raised her profile when they were dating.
Oh yeah, he raised her profile.
You know what? People wouldn't know who that person is looking sad, or maybe looking sad. I don't know, man. Let's try not to be face readers. You know, maybe he got a bad parking spot. You know, he didn't sleep well. He got some bad news via text. He's annoyed, you know.
What do you think about the fact that he scoots out without answering any questions post-game? That, like, the security clears a path for him, you know, and he's just
It won't help him. It won't help him in the end when there's a problem. It will not be his friend. People will turn on him. I think it's a bad look. When you start to hold yourself as being bigger than the operation.
Do you think Travis Kelce has struggled this season because of all the extracurricular stuff he did in the offseason?
It becomes a question.
Like, he came in out of shape?
It becomes a question when you don't play well and he's 34. And you know what happens to NFL players right around there? You know, he's 34 years old.
There's a lot to blame when you're doing a podcast and, you know, showing up in fancy outfits at tennis tournaments and whatnot.
It's not grinding. You know what I mean? Was that your first one?
Yeah, that was number 1.
Wow, it felt like a long one.
Number 2.
I don't know if that was good
like,
or bad.
I went to hit number 2 and I was like, it felt like we were here for a while.
That's like, feels like we've been married forever. Reggie Bush got his Heisman Trophy back earlier this year, but he's looking for something else. He's filed a lawsuit today against his alma mater, USC, the Pac-12, and the NCAA, seeking lost name, image, and likeness compensation. His legal team is saying in a statement to multiple media outlets that all 3 institutions benefited from the work that he put in on the field during his time as a Trojan. They identified TV contracts, merchandise sales, and media rights agreements they said coincided with his legendary career.
I also think that he's going to be accused of robbery here because he's trying to look. We all get it. You got your trophy back. He's going to get some. Maybe he's part of that house settlement. He would get, you know, some compensation there, but he wants it all back. Nothing worse than a running back scorned in this situation. Reggie Bush, moving on to number 3.
Number 3.
I don't know why this intrigues me, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's former Southern California home is on sale for just, you know, $2.9 million. But what intrigues me about this place is that it was custom built for all of his vertical needs. Like, you know, someone who is also around 7'2" might be interested in all of the features that the home has.
Where's it at?
It's in Los Angeles. It's in a gated community.
Oh, it's in Marina Del Rey. I just saw it.
12 homes. You know, it has like extra large spa and showers, high counters, big door frames. Feels like there's got to be somebody in the market for that.
That's interesting. He bought it for $1.5
million. Oh, he could make a profit.
And now he's trying to get three. So there you go. 19-time All-Star.
You too could own a home with very tall countertops.
I don't know how that would be to have a countertop that high.
I was in Stan Brock's home one time for like a party. And he has his, or had, I don't know if he still lives there, but he had his home custom built for a tall person.
I've seen this in with a variety of like athletes. What was that party like?
It was like a air show party. It was fun.
What do you mean air show? What's an air show party?
You know, like the Hillsboro air show, the stunt plane show. And they were having like
I thought you were saying they do air guitar or something.
No, it was like a pre-party for that thing. It was interesting. I just thought it was weird that we were inside his home. I never met him while we were on site.
Well, I hope they knew you were there. Number four?
Sure.
Number four.
12 members of Tufts University's men's lacrosse team have been diagnosed with that rhabdomyolysis. 9 of them went to the hospital after training on campus with someone who is an alumnus and a graduate of the Navy SEAL training program. This was a volunteer workout. 45 minutes, and it left 9 of them in the hospital. Good idea, bad idea.
Bad idea. Horrible idea. Don't overdo it on your first workout, folks. Go nice and easy. Make yourself want to come back the next day. Don't end up in the ER.
Number five.
Fun fact, going into Monday Night Football, the matchup between two former LSU quarterbacks, Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels, marks the first time in 43 years there's been a LSU quarterback matchup like that in the NFL.
A little bit of breaking news. Pete Thamel reporting that in the wake of Utah State's commitment to the Pac-12, UNLV's commitment to the Mountain West Conference has not been formalized. The school's letter that it sent to the Mountain West was predicated on all eight schools committing. So UNLV remains in play for the Pac-12 conference. Didn't mean to interrupt you, Anna,
but I
thought that trumped your five. Yeah, Stephen, what did we learn? What did we learn in the last round of realignment?
Don't trust anybody. We have no idea what we're talking about. Just listen to you.
Just. Nothing's done until it's done. Tomorrow's show is going to rock for that reason. We'll get to the bottom of it. I want you to leave it here for Thursday Night Football. Stephen, do we have to go now?
We do have to go now.
See ya. All right. Thursday Night Football's ahead.
Monday
Night Football's ahead. It's not Thursday.